Call for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's the director of WUSA 9 Call for Action and your host, Shirley Rooker.
Are you happy with your child's school? Are there opportunities for you to choose a school for your child? What do you need to know about school choice? Well, we're going to find out. My guest is Andrew Campanella. He's the president of National School Choice Week. Andrew, welcome to Of Consuming Interest.
Thank you, Shirley, so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Listen, why is it a week? Why do you call it?
Good question. It's a week because school choice is a policy issue, but it's also a very personal issue for families. And we want as many people to learn about school choice and the fact that they do have choices when it comes to their kids' education as possible. And it's actually easier to reach people when you condense a lot of publicity and interest into 1 week out of the year than to spread it out all throughout the year.
And
but
this,
with that said, it's something that we can talk about every week.
Well, of course it is, because it's something that concerns parents all year round as they see Johnny and Susie trot off to school. Okay, so let's just go back a little bit and talk about the whole issue of school choice. Is this a new issue? Is this something that's been coming across the horizon? I mean, I know I've interviewed people on the subject before, but when did the school choice movement really start? Can you address that?
Absolutely, and that's a really good question. I would say that people started talking about school choice in the 1950s, and they started talking about, you know, gee, maybe we should consider giving parents different options in terms of where they send their kids to school. But we didn't see much movement in terms of the creation of different pathways of opportunity for parents until the 90s, maybe the late 80s or the early 1990s, and that was the creation of public charter schools and then magnet schools, which are for things like arts and science, and then online learning, which came about now with the digital revolution. And of course, you've always had homeschooling, but for many families, there were only homeschooling and traditional public schools as the options that they had, going back, you know, almost to the beginning of time. But school choice in general has been a movement of the last 30 years.
So are you seeing an expansion of that movement? What's happening? Is there really momentum going forward?
Absolutely.
And I know that's what you want, yes.
Yeah, we are seeing many, many more parents having a diverse portfolio of choices for their kids. They can choose to go to the traditional public school. They can go to public charter school, magnet school. They can do online learning. They can go to a private school and use a tax credit or a scholarship to access the private school, or they can homeschool their children. So if you look at charter schools, for instance, we're seeing, 41 states, I believe, have public charter school laws, where 30 years ago, no states had charter schools. We have online learning in most states, whereas before the internet, we of course didn't have it. In private school choice, that's growing as well, with many more families accessing it. And even within traditional public schooling, we're seeing states say to parents, listen, if you want to send your child to a school in a different district or outside of your zone, you're now allowed to do so. So we are seeing school choice as really the fastest growing sector, if you will, in American education.
Well, do you have a sense of how many parents are actually utilizing the ability to make choices in schools?
We look at it around between 4 and 5 million parents when you look at all of the different choices combined. And that's not necessarily including homeschooling families, because homeschooling is several million families, and that's growing at about 2% every year. So we're seeing an increase in all these different types of choice. And to us, that's a good thing, because it means that parents are being able to match their kids up, and kids are really unique with unique schools that will fit those kids' needs.
Okay, now, you say 4 or 5 million. What percentage is that of our school population? Do you know?
You know, that's the thing. That's a good question. It's still a relatively, a small percentage, but because we're talking about many, many, many millions of kids in schools. But as these choices become more available and more parents are able to access them and talk about them to other parents, we're going to see school choice grow by leaps and bounds, because people want what their neighbors, friends, and family have. And if they see other folks being able to send their kids to a different school in their area, in the area that these other folks live in, they're going to demand that their lawmakers make some changes so that they, too, have better choices.
Now, how is this going to impact on inner city schools, for example? I know that those children supposedly have the same choices as kids in other schools, but there's always complaint about underperforming schools and so on. And I would think that, parents would want to flee from those schools if they have a choice. But right now, I'm not sure that they would – well, they couldn't all have choices because there's not the ability right now to handle the kids. Is that right? And so that's what you're looking at, is how do you expand the system so that more and more parents can get into it?
Right. I think when you're looking at inner-city schools, there are a few things at play. Number one, it's actually relatively easy to implement. I mean, nothing's easy in education. I mean, first of all, I should just say nothing's easy in education.
Sure.
But it's easier to implement – a good school choice program or system in a metropolitan area, a city, than it is in a rural area, because there are schools that have been in that city for years and years, such as private and parochial schools that kids could go to, and a lot of those schools have seats available. You also have lots of buildings that have already been created, whether they're traditional district buildings or other government buildings that could be used or private buildings that could be purchased. So you have existing bricks and mortar that could be accessed for the school. You can also change schools that aren't working into a different model. So I think that when you look at cities, and Washington, D.C. is a good example, where you have a significant array of options for parents, it has helped improve the traditional district schools, and it has also forced these options, such as charters and private schools, to also improve to meet the demands of parents. So in my opinion, school choice in an inner-city environment is sort of a rising tide that lifts all ships, because all schools are getting better to, you know, meet the challenges of competition.
Mm-hmm. Let's just talk a little bit and define what you mean, what we are talking about here with charter schools and magnet schools and so on. I think the parents, our listeners, would understand online or learning. They may not be as familiar with the terms charter schools. So tell me, what is a charter school?
Sure. Good question. You know, when we look at school choice, there are really six different options. You have traditional district schools, public schools within a school district, and parents in some cases can choose to send their kids outside of their traditional boundaries. So that's called open enrollment. Then you have public charter schools, which are fully public schools paid for with taxpayer dollars, and they are authorized by a public charter school board, which is, you know, appointed by government officials or, you know, local boards. And they create a school, and the way that school survives is because students go to it, and they're funded by the government on a per-student basis. And so in D.C., for example, there are charter schools. There are charter schools in Maryland. There are very few in Virginia, but they do exist all across the country. There are 6,000 of them. And these schools essentially live or die based on whether or not parents choose those schools to go to.
So they have to be good. They've got to have established a good reputation, or parents are not going to choose them.
Exactly. And if parents don't choose them and they don't send their kids there, they won't have enough kids to keep the school open, and they'll close. That's why you see some charter schools close, because they might not be doing a good job.
Yeah. Before we go on to the next point, let's just take a break here so our listeners will know they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Andrew Campanella. He is the president of the National School Choice Week, which actually is school choice all year round, but it is focused on one week, the end of January. Okay, so you were talking about the different options available to parents today to send their kids to school.
Yes, and charter schools we were talking about are authorized by either a public charter school board or a local college or university or a nonprofit organization, and they have to go through the process of getting authorized, getting approved, and really when they get authorized, they develop a contract. The contract says, we're going to do X, Y, and Z things in this school to improve student achievement. And as a result of getting that charter approved, they get access to the funds to educate the kids. So these are public schools. They're free for parents to send their kids to. But if the school isn't doing a good job and the school leaders don't meet their end of that contract, the school will close.
Yeah.
So that's one option. You have magnet schools. Those are also public schools. They're created by school districts or groups of school districts working together. And sometimes you'll see a magnet school for the performing arts or for math and science. These are schools with a theme designed to get students excited about learning a specific topic. Now, they cover all different, you know, things. You still got to learn English and math and social studies and history, et cetera, but you're also going to get whatever theme that school is. So well, those are the first three, and of course we have online learning and private school choice and homeschooling.
Okay, and so the online learning, that's an environment which kids may go to school and do online learning, but are you talking about an exclusive online learning experience rather than the attendance at a school?
You actually have a few different options. You have three different ways that this is done, and the first way is considered blended learning, where a kid would go to a bricks and mortar school and they would access an online course and then, you know, learn maybe from a master teacher, something that they wouldn't be able to get at that school. And then the next period, go to a regular class taught by a teacher in that school. So that's a blended learning model. Mm-hmm. And that's helping expose kids to some of the best teachers out there and the best instructors. The other option is you could have a child who would go to a learning center and learn from online instructors all day. And there are, of course, monitors there who are making sure the kids are doing their work. And then the third option is to have kids who are essentially at home with their parents taking courses online from teachers. There's lots of feedback. There's testing. There's evaluation. And then the parent directs that education along with the online school. And a lot of states have statewide virtual schools. And a study just came out in Florida showing that kids in the virtual school are actually doing better in some measures than kids in the traditional district schools. So it's a very interesting new dynamic, and I think we're going to see that grow as we're seeing the interest in online colleges and universities grow.
I'm a little simple, Andrew. What's a virtual school?
It is an online school.
Okay. All right. So we can refer to it as a virtual school as well.
Right, exactly.
Because it's not real, but it is.
Exactly. The learning is real, but the school itself is not a bricks and mortar place you walk into.
Well, I would think that in areas that have really bad weather or have in rural areas as well, if they have access to the internet, that the online learning, especially kids that have to commute a great distance, I would think that would be such an extraordinary thing.
It really is. In fact, I was just meeting with a few folks who are leading this effort across the country and raising awareness about online education and hearing some of the stories of students participating. You hear everything from they needed to, you know, do this online school because they were a star athlete and they needed to do a school schedule that fit their needs, or they were in math competitions all the time because they're math geniuses, but they needed to take the other classes, or other cases where kids are being bullied in school and they need a better environment to learn, and online education works for them. Really, all of this school choice we're talking about is tailoring education and learning to meet the individual needs of students, because that's what education should be about, educating kids and providing them with the tools and resources they need to essentially, you know, achieve their own American dream.
Well, you know, yes, what you're saying is not one mold doesn't fit everybody. So
That's exactly right. Like, we don't have cookie-cutter kids. We shouldn't have a cookie-cutter education system. That's why there are a million different types of cars we can buy, because we, you know, all have different interests in automobiles. It's why you go to the bread aisle in the grocery store and there's so many different types of loaves of bread you could buy. I mean, we have choices in every other aspect of American society.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, how does all of this impact on the traditional public school system? Is it going to take money away from it? Are we going to see less resources going to the traditional schools and many new resources going into these choices? Or what's going to shake out with this? And how do the public schools view these changes in educational opportunities?
Well, I would say when you look at a lot of the different choice models across the country in different districts, you actually see a higher number of dollars going to traditional public schools in terms of per student expenses when you have school choice programs, because these choices tend to drive down costs across the board. So if there are more charter schools, they take less of the tax dollars and more money per student can go to traditional public schools. With that said, if people are leaving traditional public schools, some of the per pupil dollars for those kids will follow the kid to the new school. But that doesn't mean that the school will necessarily suffer because they have one less student to educate. I think that you see examples in certain districts across the country where traditional district schools are really rising to meet these competitive challenges. They're advertising their successes. They're doing more to improve performance. They're working more closely with teachers. They're cutting bureaucracy. and they're trying to provide a better product that parents want and need. Well, I also want to say this. A lot of parents will still, so many parents will still always choose their traditional public school. You know, for me as an example, I went to traditional public schools my whole life, and I still believe that that was the best option for me, even when you consider all the private schools. We didn't have charter schools then, but in our area, that was the best option here. So this is not about saying we need so many different things other than the traditional public schools. It's about saying let's give parents the choice.
And I think that's the really critical thing, parents finally getting some choices to meet the needs of their child. So that's what I hear you saying, talking about kids with different abilities. That's the beauty of the magnet school. I know here in Washington there are magnet schools that focus on the arts, or like the Duke Ellington School, I believe, does that. There's just a lot of different choices for kids. I do want to come back. We're going to have to take a break in just a minute. But I do want to come back and just briefly touch on school vouchers and the status of school vouchers around the country, because I think that's an important thing in kids making school choices. But having said that, let's just let our listeners know that they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Andrew Campanella. He's the president of National School Choice Week, which isn't really a week. It's all year long, but there is a focus on a week. That made a lot of sense to me, Andrew, when you said you kind of want to focus your efforts, your PR efforts at one particular time. Go ahead.
It has seemed to really work for us, and it's because we, you know, you find if you take your resources and spread them out across an entire year, it's really hard to reach people. I mean, news is now 24/7. There's so much out there. Mm-hmm. So much content is being consumed. So we're trying to get people to focus on it during one week. We're asking all these other organizations and schools and groups that work on school choice to join us in this. And since we started 4 years ago, there have been 9,656 events held all across the country during School Choice Week. So trying to raise awareness.
That's awesome. Just go back and touch briefly on school vouchers. What's the status of school vouchers? There have been ups and downs in this area. We've heard criticism. We've heard them saying it was going to be stopped. What's happening with school vouchers? And tell our listeners why they're important.
Well, I'll tell you that across the country, we're actually seeing an increase in the number of school voucher programs. And these programs can take a lot of different forms. What a voucher essentially is telling parents, okay, if you're not happy with your local public school, you can take some of the dollars that would have gone to educate your child in that school and send them to a qualifying private school. And usually those private schools have to go through a pretty rigorous process to get accepted into the voucher program. And the amount of money is limited that parents can access, and it's certainly regulated in terms of how it's used. Mm-hmm. Other states have systems like the state of Florida, where I live, for example, where the vouchers are paid for by companies. They're not paid for by the government. They're paid for by corporations that want to help kids and families out. And most of these programs across the country, I would say 90% of them, are either designed to help low and very low middle-income families or children with disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing these programs succeed in the sense of giving parents new options and increasing student achievement. Of course, it's a hot button issue. It's not without controversy, but we always count private school choice as a choice for families, because in many cases they do have this choice, and we want them to learn about that choice and to make the best decision for their kids.
Okay. Now let's talk about how do parents make decisions. You have a website. Where can they get in touch with your organization to find information?
Sure. They can go to schoolchoiceweek.com. And the one thing I would tell parents is, at the beginning of the school year, start asking questions now if your child doesn't seem to be having a good experience in school, because you're going to want to make a new choice in the winter time. Because if you wait too long, all the seats in the best schools will fill up at the end of this school year, and you want to be able to jump on the bandwagon quickly.
So you can start looking now with the change in the school. Let's suppose your child is in a school and you're not happy, and you found some place that you want your child to go that you think would be a better fit. So you need to get in there right away, even though they may have just started the school year. What do? You submit it to the school itself? How do parents go about making these changes?
Well, that's a great question. The first thing they should do is see what's going on in their child's school to make a decision whether or not they need to make a change right now. There are some situations where a parent will want to remove their child from the school during the middle of the school year. Whether it's a child's not learning anything at all, it's going to fall perilously behind, or a child's in a situation where they're being bullied or having emotional issues at that school, you want to take your child out. So you're going to want to find a school nearby who could accept your child and talk to them about the application process, whether or not you have to apply, whether, you know, what forms you have to fill out. If it's in the public system, you know, I recommend people go to the governing board, whether it's the school board, and find out. The person in your school is not necessarily going to be the one who tells you how you can go to another school. So go to that other school and find out from them.
Great idea.
In the wintertime is when you can really actually start applying and getting accepted into these other schools. Charter schools, for example, often have what are called lotteries, where a lot of people are applying, so you got to put your name in, and then they literally draw names out of a hat of who gets to attend.
Is there any reason you couldn't apply to two or three charter schools if you have the choice?
I think that it's different in each place, but I think you can apply to multiple ones, and actually you tier them, and it'll, you know, choose.
Right, just like you do for colleges. You apply to three or four.
Exactly right. And we have the best higher education system in the world. That's why so many kids from around the world come to America. And what those of us who support school choice want is a similar process for K-12 education.
There you go. We should have equal rights for our younger children, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. We only have a couple of minutes here. What are some of the other things you want parents to think about in terms of their children's school?
Well, the first thing I want parents to do as this school year, we're well into it now, but find out what your kids are learning. Ask lots of questions. Be an involved parent, not just in checking homework, but making sure your child is enjoying the learning process. Obviously, you're not going to love every moment of school. I know I certainly didn't. But you know, you're going to want to ask questions. Go into the school, talk to the teachers, talk to administrators, ask to sit in on classes, and be involved that way. Find out what curriculum they're learning from. You know, you want to see what types of books they're using in the school. You want to see what type of teaching styles. You know, don't be afraid to ask questions, because not only is it your child's education, but you're a taxpayer, and you're paying for this school, so you deserve to have answers.
I agree. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I was saying, when it comes time to make a new choice, you want to do the same level of research, but even more, into a new school. Ask as many questions as you possibly can. Make a list of all your options, and visit the different schools, and have your child visit, too, because what your child says to you is really going to help lead the way.
Well, when my son was in grade school, I was a volunteer in his classroom. I found that to be the most informative thing in the world, and I didn't do it a lot. I would do it maybe once every 2 weeks or so, because a lot of parents took turns doing that, but just to help, and not necessarily in his classroom, but in the school itself. I don't know that I ever volunteered in his classroom, but I think that that's one way. And I think also joining the Parent Teachers Association, or whatever the group is within the school that gives you exchange with other parents, you can find out what's going on with them too. All of that kind. You're absolutely right, Andrew. That's the really important things to do. We've got just about a minute here. Any thoughts?
I want to say absolutely. You know, volunteer, visit the school, talk to your child. That's the most important thing, talking to your child about what they're learning, how they're learning, what they like, what they don't, what their overall experience is so important. And remember, parents do have choices. In some places, they don't have as many as they do in others, but school choice is on the rise. So make sure that you ask questions now and start making decisions in the wintertime, because every child deserves a chance to learn and grow up and get a great job and succeed.
I agree. Thank you, Andrew. And the website is schoolchoiceweek.com. That's schoolchoiceweek.com. Our guest has been Andrew Campanella. He's the president of National School Choice Week, which is actually something we should be looking at all year round, and he agrees with that. And you've been listening to Of Consuming Interest right here on 1500 AM. I hope if you want to get in touch with me that you'll give my send me an email at shirley@callforaction.org. And I'm Shirley Rooker. Thank you for joining us here on 1500 AM. Thanks.
Of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by WUSA 9 Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.